In our community, Rav Shechter needs no introduction. We simply want to thank him for taking out, I know it's precious time from his Chol HaMoed, to come and teach us and share words of Torah with us and share thoughts of Inyan Yisrael with us. So we thank him very much for joining us. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The story of Avelus, the minig of Avelus and Sfira, begins with a Mishnah in Yevamos. In the end of Perek Abo Yevimto, the Mishnah speaks of the mitzvah Pirei Berivya, that the Tanaim have a dispute whether only the men or even the women are obligated to get married and have children. The accepted opinion is the women are not obligated to fulfill the mitzvah Pirei Berivya. Then the Mishnah discusses how many children do you have to have in order to fulfill the mitzvah. So the accepted opinion is a son and a daughter who themselves are able to give birth to other children. Let's say a person gives birth to a son and a daughter who have some medical condition or some psychological condition, and they themselves are unable to have children of their own, so then one is not yet in fulfillment of the mitzvah. So that's recorded in the Mishnah. So then the Gemara adds on, based on the Pasuk in Mishlei, the Pasuk reads, Baboikez ra'ez arecho. In the morning you should plant your seed, but erev al tanach yadecha. In the evening you should continue to plant. You shouldn't retire. So the Gemara says that even if one has already fulfilled the mitzvah of Pivarivya in his youth by having a son and a daughter, he should try to have more children in his old age. And the pasuk concludes, because you can never tell which children will be the good children. Maybe the children that you had when you were younger will be miserable, and the children that you have in your old age will be better children. So the Gemara has this comment with respect to having children, and then the Gemara has the comment also with respect to having students, that if a person was a Rebbe teaching Torah in his youth, and then he reaches whatever the age of 65 and it's time to retire, so the Gemara recommends that if he's still able to teach, he shouldn't retire. He should try to have students even in his old age, because he can never tell which students will be the good students, whether those of your youth or those of your old age. And then the Gemara tells a story about Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva had so many thousands of students, and they all died during this period between Pesach and Shavuos because of the fact how Shalonar Bukovit Zebazet. It's very unclear what that means. They were disrespectful to each other. And then after all of the thousands of students died, Rabbi Akiva started all over again, and this time he had a small, very small group of students, and these are the famous students that we all know about. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Meir, all the famous names. And these were the people who transmitted all of the Torah Shebaal Peh, all of the Torah that Rabbi Akiva had, all the thousands of students. What is it? 24,000 pairs of students. So many students he had, thousands and thousands of students. They all died, nothing came of them. And the small handful of students that he had in his old age, those were the ones who transmitted the Torah to the later generations. It's unclear exactly what does it mean that they died during this period of time. So in the history books they say that it had to do with the revolt of Bar Kokhba, that they were killed by the Romans because they were involved in the military activities against the Roman government. The simple reading of the Gemara, that's what Rabbi Soloveitchik always used to say, that they died because of it had to do with the revolt of Bar Kokhba against the Roman government. The Gemara sounds like it was a punishment for some avera that they did. What do you mean, Lanog covered that? That's very unclear. I remember when I was a student in high school in Yeshiva, one of the Rebbe's at that time was Rabbi Henoch Fishman. The old timers will remember. He died at a young age. He suggested an interpretation in the Gemara, very interesting interpretation, that based on a passage in the Gemara Sanhedrin in the second Perek, where the Gemara comments based on a pasuk in Treyosa, that a pasuk in Novi, it's not in Treyosa, I think it's in Yecheskel, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells the prophet to take two sticks, a makal chovlim and a makal noam, two branches from a tree. What does this represent? A branch of peace, a sweet, pleasant branch, and a branch of machloikis and fighting. What is it all about? So the Gemara says that this is a reference to the two styles of learning, that in Eretz Yisrael they had Tamid HaChamim who were mani'imim zalozeh b'halacha. They were very pleasant to each other, they got along with each other, they didn't dispute, they didn't fight all the time, and they worked at the dinim in a sweet, pleasant fashion. As opposed to in Bavel, in Chutz La'aretz, in Eretz Yisrael, they were closer to the Shechina, they were closer to the Beis HaMikdash, so the Ashras HaShechina gave them the ability to work out the dinim in a pleasant, easy fashion. As opposed to the Talmid HaChamim in Bavel, who are so far away from the Makam HaShechina, so there, the only way to work out the dinim is by arguing out the issues, so they were more argumentative. So that's referred to as a Makal Chovlin. Talmid HaChamim Shebavel, Shebechutz La'aretz, are the Makal Chovlin. So I remember Reb Henoch Fishman suggested, he said himself as a very conjecture, very questionable interpretation in the Gemara, maybe Reb Akiva lived after the destruction of the Second Temple, 70 years after the destruction, that's why he thought that it's time to rebuild the Third Beis HaMikdash, just like there was a pause of 70 years between the destruction of the First Beis HaMikdash and the building of the Second Beis HaMikdash. They were told in advance that it will only be a pause of 70 years. So he thought, based on a Pasuk in Navi, that there will be a pause of 70 years between the destruction of the Second Beis HaMikdash and the building of the Third, and that's why he thought that Bar Kochba, it's time for him to be the Melech HaMashiach, and everything was going to straighten out. And then it turned out that it was a big mistake. There wasn't yet time to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. So maybe the students of Rabbi Akiva thought that since the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, so Eretz Yisrael has the same status as Chutz La'aretz, so the Derech Halima should be a Makal Chovman. So they were not Neukovitz and Bezet, they learned the way we learn. No, you don't know what you're talking about, you're crazy, you're off your mind, you read it wrong, you don't know pshat, the way we talk and learn with each other. And that's why they were punished, because they were Mevazah, the Derech Halima, the Eretz Yisrael. So he said himself, it's a very conjecture, very wild interpretation, that's why they were punished and they should die, because they were adopting the wrong Derech Halima. But we're not sure what the Gemara means. So the Gemara says that when all of these thousands and thousands of students died during this period between Pesach and Shavuos, v'hayo ha'olam shamein, the world of Torah was desolate, there was hardly anybody learning Torah, until Rabbi Akiva met up with this small group of five or six new students, and he started to teach the Torah all over again, and everything was restored to the previous status. So the Gaonim comment, if you look in the tour, he quotes the Chilush Agam, you look in the Otsur HaGoyim and Yevomis at the end of Perek HaBo Yevimtoi. So the Gaonim who preceded the days of Rashi and Tosfos, they say that it's based on this historical source in the Gemara that the students of Rabbi Akiva died this season of the year, that we observe a form of Avelus. At this time, Avelus over the Churban HaTorah, that so much of the Torah was lost at that time. Rav Soloveitchik pointed out, this is quoted in Svarim, it's not a secret, that the Zohar seems to present a different version, that during this period of Sfirah, there's a concept of Avelus min HaTorah. Why so? We have sometimes in the Torah that if an individual person, sometimes a man, sometimes a woman, if a person is Tomei, so sometimes he goes to Mikveh the same day, if he touches Sheret, sometimes you have to go to Mikveh the next day, Zavah Ketana. And sometimes you have to count Shiva Nikim. Sometimes you have to count 7 days in order to be able to go to Mikveh after the 7 days are up. So the Zohar says, and what if an entire nation is Tomei and they want to purify themselves? So it's not sufficient that you should wait Shiva Nikim 7 days. You have to wait 7 weeks. So that's what the Zohar claims is the idea behind the counting of the Sfiras HaOmer. Tosfos discusses the comparison between counting 7 days by Azav and Azava and counting 7 weeks of the Sfiras HaOmer. So the Zohar says that they're the same, that if the whole nation is Tameh, and the Jewish people, when they were in Egypt, were worshipping Avodah Zarah, they were separate by Hisham Legoy, Malam Shahisham Mitzuyanim Sham. We say in the Haggadah they were Mitzuyanim, they were observing the nationalistic mitzvahs. Shaloshina Shmam, Lashina Malbusham, the Jews were speaking Hebrew or Yiddish, whatever was considered the Jewish language, and they preserved their Jewish names, and they wore Beged Ivri, whatever, they dressed like Jews, they didn't dress like the Egyptians, but they adopted everything else from the culture that they were in. They were worshipping Avodah Zarah, violating all the Shabbos and Kashrus and Taras HaMishpach and everything. And when it came time for Kriyas Yamsuf, the Medrash says, the Yam responded back, what do you mean? Why should I split halal of the Avodah Zarah, halal of the Avodah Zarah? What, the Yam should split and let the Israel walk through on the dry land? And then the water should gather back together again and drown the Mitzrayim? They both worship the same Avodah Zarah. Well, why should these people be saved and why should the others be punished? So because the Jewish people were on such a low level of Tumah, So they needed 7 weeks in order to purify themselves, in order to be able to receive the Torah at Har Sinai. They weren't yet ready to accept the Torah at Har Sinai. So the Zohar presents it that when a person is in a state of Tumah, he's not permitted to enter the Beis HaMikdash. This means that he has to stay far away from the Ribbono Shel Olam. If you're allowed to enter the Beis HaMikdash, it means you can come close to God. If you're Tumah, you can't enter the Beis HaMikdash, you're far, further away from the Ribbono Shel Olam. So this itself, by definition, puts one in a state of Avelus. When one is far away from the Ribbono Shel Olam, so that's what the Zohar says, that during this period of Sphira, not just for 33 days, trying to figure out which 33 days has nothing to do with the death of the students of Rabbi Akiva. It's built into the nature of the counting of the 7 weeks. During this period of time, that's what those who say the tefillah after the Sfiras HaOmer, they have a Hasidish tefillah that's printed in all the regular Sidurim. I don't know if it's printed in Roya Siddur, but all other regular Sidurim have this Hasidish tefillah printed, that we are counting the Sfira Sa'ima, but Taharenu Mikliposenu Mitumasenu, in order to bring us to a state of Tahara, just like an individual who's Tomei counts Shivanikim 7 days. So the Jewish nation, when in a state of Tumah, has to count 7 weeks and purify themselves. So the Zohar says that during the 7 weeks of Sfira Sa'ima, all of Klal Yisrael is in a state of Avelus because of this state of Tumah, because they have to stay far away from the Ribbono Shel Olam, and that's why we don't recite Hallel Shalem on Shvi Yishal Pesach. The Zohar raises the question, why don't we recite Hallel Shalem only the first 2 days of Pesach? And Eretz, so the first day of Pesach, they recite Hallel Shalem, the rest of Pesach we only recite Chatzi Hallel, on a lower level. So the Zohar asks the question, why shouldn't we recite Hallel Shalem on the seventh day of the Pesach? After all, Zechel HaNes, that's the day on which Kriyas Yamsuf occurred. So just like on Hanukkah we recite Hallel Zechel HaNes, so why shouldn't we recite Hallel on Shri Yishal Pesach Zechel HaNes? So the Gemara asks something similar. The Gemara in Erech and Daf Yud raises the question, how come on Sukkot, on each day of Sukkot we recite Hallel Shalem, as opposed to Pesach we only say Hallel Shalem on the first day, or Chutz Lortz on the first 2 days, and the rest of Pesach we only recite Chatzi Hallel? Why is there a discrepancy between Pesach and Sukkot? So the Gemara answers that on Sukkot each day has a different parsha in the Chumash, and each day he says you bring a different carbon, chaluk and the carbon is same. It says on the 15th of Tishrei you bring this carbon, b'yom hasheni, b'yom hashlishi, b'yom harvi'i. Every day of Sukkot is a yontif b'fnei atzmai. So every day of Sukkot is a separate mitzvah of yontif, so the separate chiyuv of simcha, and the chiyuv simcha is what engenders the chiyuv to recite halal, the simcha saguf, to eat and to drink and to be merry, to have basa v'yayim, and the simchas hanefesh, to recite halal, to express one's appreciation to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's a form of simchas yontif. So on Sukkot, each day, in Parshas Pinchas, each day of Sukkot has a separate parsha, because the korbanos are separate. So therefore each day has its own chiyuv to bring, to have simcha and to recite halal shalom. On Pesach, everything is included in one parsha. It's one long Kedushas Hayom that extends for 7 days. So one is only obligated to fulfill mitzvah, the mitzvah of simcha, once during the duration of the 7 days of Pesach. So they say halal on the first day, say yeh yotzei aren. Let's say we say halal on the second day because of the sfeika of the other. Maybe the first day was really Erev Pesach. So that's why you have to say halal on the second day. But let's say one wasn't feeling well, or for whatever reason one didn't recite halal shalom the first 2 days of Pesach, and he wakes up on the second day Chalamayit, third day Chalamayit, last day Chalamayit Pesach, he realizes he hasn't yet said Halal. So then based on this interpretation, this Rav Soloveitchik's interpretation that he heard from his father, so he said his father, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, got it on, if a person didn't recite Halal Shalom on either of the first 2 days, and he wakes up in the middle of Chalamayit, and he realizes he didn't yet say Halal Shalom, so he has to say on the last days of Pesach, he has to say sometime or another during the 7 day Yontif of Pesach. There's one Chiyuv Simcha that stretches for all 7 days. On Sukkot each day is a separate Kedushas Hayom with a separate Chiyuv Simcha. And on Pesach it's one long Kedushas Hayom which has a Chiyuv Simcha that you have to fulfill sometime during the duration of the 7 days. So the Gemara already answers this question, why don't we say Halal Shalom on Shvi Yishal Pesach? The Gemara says we were all Yotzei B'Tahal that we said on the first day of Pesach, because it's different from Sukkot, it's not Chaluk and the Karbanos Emla Sukkot is. So the Why does the Zohar have to give another answer, a different answer from the answer that the Gemara gave, or the Beisheshev quotes a Medrash, the famous Medrash? Medrash also raises the question, why don't we say Halal Shalom on Shvi Yishol Pesach? After all, that we should commemorate the Nes of Kriyas Yamsuf that occurred on Shvi Yishol Pesach. So the Beisheshev quotes the Medrash says that it's not proper that Maisa Yadei Tavim Ayam Ve'atam Omem Shiro, that the Mitzrayim were suffering and they all drowned and they died, they were punished, and we're going to sing Halal on Pesach. That's not Derech Eretz, it's not proper. So the question is asked by the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch, why did the Medrash have to give a different answer from the Gemara? Why did the Zohar need another answer? What was wrong with the Gemara's answer? So Rav Soloveitchik explained, this appears in the Sefer Yeshuas Yankiv on the Shulchan Aruch Hilchos Pesach. He says, you look in the Gemara in Erech and Das Yud, the Gemara says there are at least two different Mechayvim to recite Halal. One Mechayv of Halal is, like on Chanukah, Zechel Nes. A Nes occurred so many years ago, so you want to commemorate that Nes by reciting Halal today. Then on Yom Tov, even if the Yom Tov wouldn't have any Nes at all, there's a Mechayv to recite Halal because of Simchas Yom Tov. It's a form, that's what the Ramban points out in Sefer Mitzvah, that reciting Halal is a form of fulfilling the Mitzvah of Simchas Yom Tov. So the Gemara in Erech and Daf Yud answers one half of the question. Why don't we recite Halal every day on Pesach, just like we do on each day of Sukkot? Why isn't there a Chiyuv Simcha each and every day? So the Gemara responds, no, on Pesach, it's all the 7 days of Pesach are described in one parsha in the Chumash. It's not Chaluk in the Korban Hashem. So there's one Chiyuv Simcha that extends for all 7 days. So you were Yotzei ready. You already said Halal on the first 2 days. Halal Shalom on the first 2 days. There's no obligation to recite the Halal the rest of the Pesach. The Rambam says, the Chatzi Halal that we recite the rest of Pesach is only a minhog. The Chatzi Halal on Rosh Chodesh is only a minhog. So the Chatzi Halal the rest of Pesach, the Rambam thinks is only a minhog. So the Gemara is giving the explanation that on Pesach you don't recite Halal Shalom on the latter days, including Shvi Yishol Pesach, because it's not Chaluk and the Korban Hashem. The Gemara's question, the Gemara posed a different question from the Zohar and from the Medrash. The Gemara was asking a question, why don't you recite Halal every day out of the Simchas Yom Tov? So the Gemara says, the Simchas Yom Tov we will Yotzei Reni in the first 2 days. But the Medrash and the Zohar are asking a different question. That's why they have to give a different answer. Why don't you recite Halal Shalom on Shvi Yishol Pesach Zechel Nes like on Chanukah? On Chanukah, the Gemara says the recitation of the Halal is not because of the Simchas Yom Tov. It's rather because of the Zechel Nes. So why not say Halal Shalom on Shvi Yishol Pesach Zechel Nes? So to this, the Medrash gave the answer, it's not Derech Eretz, Maisa Yadei Tavim Ayam Ve'atam Omem Shiro, and the Zohar gave the other answer, that during the period of Shira, we observe Avelus Min HaTorah, nothing to do with the students of Rabbi Akiva dying, since we're counting the 7 weeks to accomplish Tahara for the Klal Yisrael, so when we're in a state of Tumah, this itself implies that we're meruchok, we're a distance from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and one in the state of Avelus, it's not proper to recite Halal Shalem of Zechel Nes. That was one of the times that Rav Neiria had against Rav Meshulam Roth. Rav Meshulam Roth was a goyin ha-goyinim. He ran away from the Nazis during the war, and he was in the Rabbanut and Eretz Yisrael. He was the one who was called upon to write the tshuva about saying Halal on Yom Ha'atzmaut. So he wrote a tshuva halacha l'maaseh in his sefer Kol Mevaseh. My father is a chanel baruch. Remember Rav Meshulam Roth from Europe. My father left Europe a month after Rav Meshulam Roth was appointed the rav in his little village. He was a tremendous goyin, but he never got a good rabbanus in Europe because he belonged to the Mizrahi all along. So he was always in little villages. He was there, but he came to Eretz Yisrael. Then he made him a big man in the rabbanut. He was such a goyin. He was a big baki and a big chorif and everything. So he wrote a whole shulah about why it's proper to recite Halal Shalom on Yom Ha'atzmaut. So Rav Moshe Tzvi Neiria sent him a letter where he raised this objection, that the Zohar says that it's not proper to recite Halal Shalom on Shvi Yishol Pesach because the Klal Yisrael is in a state of Tumah, in a state of Avelus. So maybe it's not proper to recite Halal Shalom on Yom Ha'atzmaut. You're saying this is a Zecher. You're not saying that it's a Simchas Yom Tov on Yom Ha'atzmaut. You're saying it's a Zecher to the Nes of HaKamas HaMedina, the Nes of the Nitzot and the Muhammad and so on. So maybe that's not proper, maybe based on the Zohar, it's not proper to recite Halal Shalom at that time. He had a few other objections also, but this is one of the objections, based on this passage in the Zohar. In the Shulchan Aruch, when this minhag is recorded that we have a minhag to observe Miktas Avelis during the period of Sira. So it doesn't explain exactly. It says the minhag is that we refrain from taking haircuts, tisporos, and we don't get married during that season of the year. We don't have nisuin and tisporos. How do they know how exactly to set up the form of minhag Avelis? So Rav Soloveitchik always used to explain that there are three different levels of Avelis. We have Rachman al-Atam, and somebody does. You have Shiva and Shloshim. The Shiva is the most intense period of Avelis, and you have the Shloshim, is a little less intense. And if it's a parent who passed away, so then one observes Avelis for Yud Beis Chodesh, for the first 12 months. So Rav Soloveitchik was working with a premise that he picked up from the Vilna Gaon. The Bir Agra, in his commentary on Shulchan Aruch, will always give you the Makaris. He doesn't give any pilpulim. He just gives you what is the earliest source for the din in the Shulchan Aruch. The Vilna Gaon was a great-grandson of the Be'er HaGoyla, who gives you the Mar Mekaymus. So when you study the Be'er HaGoyla, you have to first look in the Be'er HaGoyla, and the Vilna Gaon is just adding on the missing Mar Mekaymus. It's to be read together with the Be'er HaGoyla. A lot of times, the first Be'er HaGoyla on the Siman will say Shom. Where's Shom? What do you mean, Ibid? He didn't say anything yet, didn't give any Maramakam. I mean, Shom, the same Maramakam, the same source that the Be'er HaGoyla gave for the first line in the Shulchan Aruch. Be'er HaGoyla gives you the sources for the Sif. And the Vilna Gaon gives you the source for every phrase in the Sif. So a lot of times he'll say the first Maramakam will be Shom, assuming that you're reading the Be'er HaGoyla first and he's filling in the Maramakam. So when the Shulchan Aruch very often records Minhagim, and Orechayim, and in Yeridah, and in Eben Ezra, also records Minhagim. So the Vilna Gaon will always explain what the minhag is based on. Not the reason. Every minhag has a reason. But it's not sufficient that the minhag has a reason. There's a famous comment that's made by the Rabbi Natam that the word minhag is spelled mem, nun, hey, gimel, is the same letters as Gehenim. Gimel, hey, nun, mem. That one observes a minhag, well, a lot of times that's the straight path to Gehenim. Why? If it's a minhag shtus, so then you go to Gehenim. Only if it's a minhag that's meaningful, then you observe it. If you study the Bava Basra, the first Mishnah in Bava Basra is problematic. The Mishnah says how thick the wall has to be, if it's made from this material, that material, the other material. Then the Mishnah concludes, Hakol Kaminig Hamdina. So Tosfos has the kasha, if you're going to end off Hakol Kaminig Hamdina, so what do you have to waste your time explaining if it's material A, B, or C, how thick the wall has to be? So Tosfos says, no, the Mishnah is telling you, if you have a minhag hamdina to make the wall thicker than the Mishnah records in material A, B, or C, that's a minhag shtus, and you don't follow that minhag. On the Kan Yesh Lilmod, and based on this first Mishnah of Bava Basra, Tosfos on the first daf of Bava Basra points out, and based on analysis, you can see that there is some minhagim that are minhag shtus that you're not supposed to observe. So how do you know what's a minhag shtus and what's a valid minhag? All the minhagim have a good reason. But just because it has a good reason doesn't mean that it's not a minhag shtus. So this is a question, what's the definition of a minhag shtus? Rav Soloveitchik, based on the Yuri HaGro, the comments of the Vilna Gaon, assume that a minhag shtus means a minhag that doesn't have any keel. We have a rule called the Tikkun Rabbanon Kein Deraisa Tikkun. When the Chachamim introduced the Din Rabbanon, so it has to be along the lines of the Dinim Deraisa. They have to present it. We have halachic concepts. We have a halachic dictionary. We have terms. Terminology. Let's say if you're talking about physics, or you're talking about chemistry, so you don't talk about sine and cosine. I already forgot all of my mathematics. There are certain terms, there are certain concepts that belong, each discipline is self-contained. So physics has its own concepts, has its own system of logic. And chemistry has its own system of logic. And mathematics has its own system, and halacha has its own system. So you can't invent a din derabbanon based, you're inventing new concepts. You have to take the building blocks of the dinim deraisa and mix them together and come up with a din derabbanon. Even though you have a good reason why you want to make a din derabbanon, very often those who study Gemara know the reasons for the din derabbanon is one, and the mahalach of the din derabbanon, how they set it up is totally different, because you can't just invent a din derabbanon based on a concern that you have or a consideration or a hashash for someone doing an avera. You have to be mistak in the din of Rabbanon pattern after the din of Deraisa. So the Vilna Gaon makes this assumption that when you want to introduce a minhag, it also has to be along the lines of halachas, either along the lines of a din Deraisa or along the lines of a din Rabbanon. There has to be some kiyum or another. To observe a minhag that makes good sense. There's a good reason for the minhag, but it's not a kiyum. You're not mekayim anything, not on the level of the Rishon, not on the level of the Rabbanon. So that's what we might define as a minhag shtus. Take, for example, in Shulchan Aruch it says that the minhag was for many centuries to recite the Haggadah on Shabbos Haggadah. Why so? To prepare for Leil HaSeder. In Yiddish, the expression goes, the year is very long and the memory is very short. So we already forgot what we did last year at Hanukkah, last year on Purim. We forgot what we did last year by the Seder. So the meaning developed that you recite the Haggadah on Shabbos Haggadah in preparation for the Seder night. So that's what it says in the Rambam Shulchan Aruch. So the Vilna Gaon abolished, he did away with that meaning. And many communities, they don't recite the Haggadah on Shabbos Haggadah. Why? He says, because it says in the Haggadah, Yochum Erash Chedesh Tamalai Ma Bayam Ahu, Hidu Yam Ahu Yochum Ma Bayam Tamalai Ma Bavazeh, Bavazeh La Ma'ata B'Shal Shesh Ma'ata Ma'am Menachum Lefanach. So it says the famous in the Haggadah, that there's no Kiyam HaMitzvah in reciting the Haggadah before. So no one said there's a Kiyam HaMitzvah, he said it's a Minig. No, the Vilna Gaon said it's a Minig Shtus. What do you mean? You have a Minig against the Halacha? A Minig has to, look, but the Minig is to prepare, no? But you can't tell me that the minhag is binding if the halacha says that you're not in fulfillment of any. Or take, for example, for many generations, the practice was, like it says in the Shulchan Aruch, that on Shabbos Chazon, the Shabbos in the 9 days before Tisha B'Av, one doesn't wear Big Day Shabbos. There's a whole explanation what the definition of Big Day Shabbos. For Big Day Shabbos means trousers with a crease. So we wear trousers with a crease all week long. So it's not going to help. If you wear dungarees, that's not called. If you wear jeans, so that's not called Big Day Shabbos. But if you go with a suit, it's not going to help if you're going to wear your weekday suit on Shabbos Chazayin. The weekday suit also has the status of Big Day Shabbos because it has a crease in the trousers. So stand by us, it doesn't make any sense at all. What do you mean we're not going to wear Big Day Shabbos? I've got them all week long. I'll ask people wear jeans all week long. And Shabbos, they wear an outfit with a crease in the trousers, that's called Big Day Shabbos. They told me there was a rabbi who wouldn't wear a Shabbos Dikah hat on Shabbos Chazon. He'd wear his Big Day Shabbos, but he wouldn't wear the Shabbos Dikah hat. The Shabbos Dikah hat is not a violation of Big Day Shabbos. The commentaries on the side, the Levush Yisroel and the others explain Big Day Shabbos means the trousers that have the crease. By us, the trousers all week long have a crease. So by us, we always wear Big Day Shabbos. So the Vilna Gaon is quoted, the Mishnah Berurah quotes, the Vilna Gaon abolished that meaning. That you do wear Big Day Shabbos on Shabbos Chazayin. Why? He says it's against the halacha. You can't have a minig that's against the din. The Gemara says that if Tisha B'Av falls out on Shabbos, no one fasts on Shabbos, you fast on Sunday, you postpone the tanish, and on Shabbos you can eat in the Suda HaMafsek, because normally the last meal that you eat on Erev Tisha B'Av in the afternoon, after Hatzayis, you're not permitted to have Basar Yayin, you don't have Shnei Tavshilin, but it says Shabbos on Shabbos, on which Tisha B'Av falls out, you can be malach shulchanik kusuda shloimer b'shaita. You can eat whatever you want. There are no restrictions at all. On Shabbos, there's no avelus for the 9 days at all. So they've only got to abolish the minig. He said, "What do you mean? You have a minig in the Shulchan Aruch for many generations, to wear big day chol on Shabbos Chazan. It's against the din." So he was mevatel that. If you look in the Vilna Gaon in his commentary on Shulchan Aruch, whenever the Shulchan Aruch, whether in Yerideya or in Aruch Haim or in Eben Ezra, whenever they quote a minhag, so the Vilna Gaon will always not just give a reason. Either the other commentaries give the reason. The Vilna Gaon will tell you what you're in fulfillment of by observing this minhag. If there's no kiyum, then it's not really a minhag. Rav Moshe Feinstein has such a tshuva, where he talks about the minhag to get married outside as opposed to getting married. We get married tachas kippas or rakia, we walk outside to get married, as opposed to getting married in the building. So what is that based on? So this is to invoke the blessing that was given to Avraham Avinu. He was in his tent, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him, Vayotzei Osa Achutza, the Rebbe Shlom told him, you should go outside, you should look up at the sky, it was nighttime, Svara Kachovim Utucha Lispur, count the stars, and he gave him a blessing, Kol Yezarech. So that's what we do. We walk outside of the building. Now they have the meaning that they make a hole in the ceiling. But that's not the correct fulfillment of the meaning. The correct fulfillment is Vayotzei Osa Achutza. We walk outside to reenact the incident that Avraham Avinu had. He walked outside and you look up in the sky and you see all the stars and we were blessed with Kol Yezarecha. So if a girl is getting married at a young age, if a woman is an almana and she's 75 years old and she's remarrying, so she's not interested in invoking the blessing of having a lot of children at the age of 75. So then the meaning was they get married in the house. But if she's a young girl and she wants to be blessed with having children, the meaning was that they would get married outside. So Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva. He says, this is very nice, you want to invoke a blessing, reminiscing, but he says, there's no kiyum of anything. So he says, strictly speaking, this minig is not binding. He says, it's a nice thing, but you can't say that this is a minig. A minig is only, you're mechuyev to observe a minig if there's a kiyum of some kind of a din or another. Called the Tikkun Rabbanan came, the Rashi Tikkun said, call any minhagim have to be ke'ein halacha. It has to be along the, using the building blocks of halacha, either halacha, the Rashi, halacha, the Rabbanan. Here there are no building blocks at all. I remember I heard Rav Soloveitchik was joking about this, that one of the boys was getting married in a hall where they weren't able to there was no hole in the ceiling and wasn't able to get married outside. So he asked Rav Soloveitchik, what should he do? So Rav Soloveitchik said jokingly, God listens to the brachas even if they're recited inside the house. You don't have to say the brachas outside. It doesn't have to be so close to the heavens. So the students were wondering, why was he making fun of this minhag? It's an old minhag that's recorded in the Shulchan Aruch. And some even claim that it appears in the Talmud Yerushalmi. Some interpret a passage in the Talmud Yerushalmi as referring to this minhag, a very old minhag. So later on when we saw the tshuva of Rav Moshe Feinstein, so we understood why Rav Moshe also makes fun of it. He said, this minhag isn't really a kiyum of any din or another stuff. It's a nice idea, like the kala wears a white gown. He can't, is mechuyev to wear a white gown? What if the kala wants to wear a blue gown or a green gown? He doesn't say, hey, he can't say she's in violation of a minhag. So if you don't want to get married, tachas kippah, okay, you can't say that you're in violation of a minhag. It's not a kiyum of anything. So this is the idea that only going to develop that. Minhagim has to be a kiyum of some din or another. And every minhag has to have some halachic mahalach. On the first Dachim Sochem, on the Beis Amid Beis, the Gemara quotes a dispute among the Tanaim. On Erev Pesach, it's forbidden to do malach. People are not supposed to go to work. So there's a machloikes hatanoim, whether this is a din or a minig, not going to work on Erev Pesach is a din or a minig. And then there's a further machloikes hatanoim, when does the Yisra Malacha begin? Does it begin after Chatzos? Does it begin from Alois HaShachar? Does it begin from Hanesach Hama? It's unclear. So the Gemara on that base on the base in Sochim quotes the machloikes hatanoim, when does the Yisra Malacha begin? Does it begin from Alos HaShachar or from Hanetzach Ham? So Rashi interprets on the Gemara. Rashi claims that the Machlekes is on the assumption that the Minik HaMokim is not to do Malacha. It's a Minik, not to do Malacha on Erev Pesach. So when does the Minik set in? So Tosfos says, how can you have a Machlekes HaTanaim? Yes, the Balabatim, what the Minik is. You can't have a Machlekes. If the Minik is, it starts from 10 o'clock in the morning, so be it. If it starts from 2:30 in the afternoon, whatever the minig is, that's the minig. So Tosfos doesn't agree with Rashi. Tosfos says, no, this machlokes hatanaim, when the Yisra Malacha begins on Erev Pesach, whether from Alos HaShachar or Hanetzach Hama, must be on the assumption that the prohibition against doing Malacha on Erev Pesach is a real din, it's not a minig. And they argue, din de Rabbanan, and they argue, when does the din de Rabbanan set in? But if they're working on the assumption that the prohibition to do Malacha on Erev Pesach is only a minig, so it's not shach to have a machlokes hatanoim. So what's that of pshat and Rashi? So the belt and turf is pshat and Rashi. Rashi holds even if it's a minig, but he has to work with a mahalach. He can't just have a minig. We have a minig to stand on the head every Wednesday evening at 10 to 9. What does it correspond to? If the doctors say that it's very healthy to stand on your head once a week, especially Thursday night, so then you say, okay, there's a din in the Torah, you have to take good care of your health. And the doctors are ascertained that Thursday night, Wednesday night, whatever, 10 to 9 is the best time. So the Rabbanim says we develop a minig because that's the best time medically. But if it doesn't correspond to anything, what do you mean? Such a minig is ridiculous. That would be a minig shtus. So Rashi understands on the Gemara, on the base and the base, that all the Tanaim are working with the premise that the prohibition to do Malach and Erev Pesach is a minig, but the minig has to have a mahalach. It has to have a halachic mahalach. So that's why the Tanaim argue when... How does it make sense to institute such a minik? Does the minik to prohibit malacha have to begin from Alos HaShachar, or can it begin from Hanetzach Hama? See here also, with respect to the minig of Avelis doing Svira, so it has to correspond to some form of Avelis or another. We have Api Alacha, three different forms of Avelis. You have Shiva, you have Shloshim, you have Yud Beis Chodesh. So the Shulchan Aruch says that we have the minig is from the days of the Gaonim that we observe Miktsas Avelis. So what does Miktsas Avelis mean? So Ashaleshi pointed out that it's not his Chiddush. People have attacked him over this. The Tzadik Meir said this before Rabbi Soloveitchik. Rabbi Soloveitchik, everything that he said is printed already in Svarim before, but he just said it in a very dramatic fashion. So because he said it so dramatically, the people thought he's making everything up. But it says in the classical Pasuk, he said this, the Tzadik Meir. Tzadik Meir says from centuries ago. Tzadik Meir says like this, that the observance of Mitzvah Avelis means the lowest form, the weakest form of Avelis. Not Shiva. We don't observe an Avelis of Shiva during Shiva. We don't observe Shloshim either. We observe the weakest, the lowest form of Avelis is Yud Beis Chodesh. So that's what we observe during the Sira period. The part of Meir says it in the following context. The Vizah Machlokes in the end of Yerideya, the din is that one in Avelis, Yud Beis Chodesh, let's say a parent died, so the children have to observe Avelis for the first 12 months. So they're not permitted to take a haircut for 12 months until you reach the point of Igar B'chader. That we'll get to soon. So in Shulchan Aruch there's a dispute between the Mechaber and the Ramah. What if the one who's observing Avelis is a daughter, not a son? Maybe women are permitted to take a haircut right after the Shloshim is up. Maybe they're allowed to take a haircut in Yud Beis Chodesh. Why should there be a difference between men and women? What is the Machloek is based on? So it's actually two Girsis in the Gemara Yevamos. In the middle of Yevamos, the Gemara talks a little bit about this din. So there are two ways, there are two varying readings in the text of the Gemara, whether the Gir says that by women the din of Avelis, Yud Beis Chodesh, doesn't apply, they're permitted to take a haircut or not. What's the issue? So the issue is that during Shiva, during Shloshim, one is not permitted to take a haircut. Even if the person really needs a haircut, let's say he hasn't taken a haircut in a year, and he looks awful. So the din is not allowed to take a haircut during Shloshim. But after the Shloshim is up, so then we have the lower form of Avelis of Yud Beis Chodesh. So then the Gemara says, the Gemara quotes a Braisa, that if the person looks in the mirror and sees that he looks awful, so then he's permitted to take a haircut. So the Gemara has two girsas. Maybe if a woman feels that she needs a haircut, so maybe by definition it's also always considered Igar B'chaver. Maybe you don't have to wait till she looks in the mirror, she feels that she looks awful. Maybe by women it's always considered Achi Igar B'chaver. So the Mechaber of Yosef Karpas comes like that women, after Shloshim is up, never have to wait any longer with respect to taking haircuts. Even if the parents have died, they're permitted to take a haircut right away. And the Ramah says not so. The Ramah has the other gears, the gears of the Ashkenazim. And the Gemara Yevamos, that even women have to wait Achi Igar B'chaver. So the Parim here says, what if it's a woman in the middle of Sfira? You know that the men don't take haircuts in the middle of Sfira. What about women taking haircuts in the middle of Sfira? So the Panamira says he thinks that you can be Mako. Even though we're Ashkenazim, Panamira was an Ashkenazi, and Ashkenazim say that even a woman in Avelis Yud Beis Chodesh has to wait Achi Igar B'chavero. But he says, look, there is another girsa in the Gemara in Yevamos. The Mechaber had the girsa that by women, whenever a woman feels that she wants to get a haircut, we automatically declare it Achi Igar B'chavero. And you're not talking about a real din over here, you're talking about a minig. So he says, Maspik, Genuk Mahmed Sezai. He says, when it gets to women in Sira, you can be Mekel that even the Ashkenazim can rely on the Mechaber's opinion over here that women are allowed to take a haircut during Sira. So the Paramiris is the one who says like this, that the Miktas Avelis that we observe during Sira clearly does not correspond to Shiva, clearly does not correspond to Shloshim, it only corresponds to the Avelis of Yud Beis Chodesh. That's what Rav Soloveitchik used to say, Avelis of Yud Beis Chodesh, one is not permitted to take haircuts, Nisuin and Tispiris, that's all. You're not allowed to take a haircut, you're not allowed to go to a wedding, you're not allowed to get married. So, but in Avelis Yud Beis Chodesh Gufa, let's say the person really needs a haircut, he looks awful, he looks in the mirror, he knows that he sees that he looks awful, so then the din is he's permitted to take care. So as you said, the same is going to be in Avelis of Sphere. It's parallel to Yud Beis Chodesh. If a person really needs a haircut, I remember years ago when Rabbi George Finkelstein used to be the principal of the MTA high school, so there were always students who didn't like to take haircuts. So their mothers would push them before Pesach take a haircut, and then they would always get out of it, and then Chol HaMoed, they're not allowed to take Yerka, then Seir, they're not allowed to take Yerka. So Rabbi Finkelstein would always bring the kid over to me in the Beis Medrash and say, Rabbi Shechter, is this kid, had the long hair, he looked awful. So he said, is this kid allowed to take Yerka? I said, yes, right now, she goes to the barber right now. Because Rabbi Galechik said that the Avelus of Seir is parallel to Avelus of Yid Beis Chodesh. And once he reached the point of Yigar Bach Avero, so he's permitted to take it. So that's what Rabbi Galechik used to say regarding shaving. He used to shave during Seir. Why? So he said that the Poskim say to take a haircut, let's say a parent dies. So even after Shloshim is up, the person is not allowed to take a haircut until he reaches the point of Yigar B'Haver. When is that point reached? So the Ramah writes in the end of Yeredeya, if 3 months have gone by since the last haircut that the person took. It doesn't mean 3 months since the beginning of the Avelus. It's 3 months since the last haircut that he took. Where did they get that arbitrary shear of 3 months? So Ramah Feinstein writes in his Chubas that he thinks what probably happened was the following. He's guessing, he's reconstructing the history here. So he thinks that in the days of the Ramah, the practice probably was that they took a haircut every month and a half. So he thinks that you have to wait twice as long as you usually wait. He says that today, many people are in the practice of taking a haircut once a month, every month. So he thinks that strictly speaking should be enough if you wait 2 months. Then what about shaving? How long does a person have to shave? So the practice is, let's say when Shloshim is up, people will shave all the time. When Shloshim is up, they wait to take the haircut 2 months, 3 months, whatever. But as far as shaving, people shave the morning of Shloshim. We apply the rule, Mitzvah Sayyam Kukula, and the people shave right away. Why don't they have to wait till Yigar B'Chaveru? The answer is, it is Yigar B'Chaveru. For people who shave every day, so if you wait a couple of days, if you, like Rav Moshe Feinstein said, you wait twice as long as you don't normally wait. So if a person is already in Shloshim, it's already after Shloshim. It's after 7 days already. It's after a few weeks already. So that's already Yigar B'Chaveru. So that's what Rav Soloveitchik used to say. That as far as shaving during Sfira, since it's not more chomer than Avelus Yud Beis Chodesh, so one is permitted to shave. If you waited till a couple of days of Yom Tov, so you're ready Yigar B'Chaveru, so then you're allowed to shave. So then the question is that you have to wait each time at Yigar B'Chaveru. Let's say one is an Avelus for a parent. So the Ramah writes in Shulchan Aruch, you're supposed to wait 3 months since you took your last haircut to take your haircut during Yud Beis Chodesh. Then you have to wait next time. Also 3 months. Each time you have to wait 3 months. So the common practice is not so. The common practice, we follow Rabbi Akiva Eger, who's printed on the bottom of the page in the big Yerodeya. So he says, you only have to wait the first time, Ashigar B'Chaverov, and after he waited the 3 months, so the 2-3 months of the first haircut, so then you take haircuts and you shave normally. That's the common practice. Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Soloveitchik both thought that that was a very difficult Rebbe Kiveger, and they recommended one should not follow that practice. But Lamaisa, that's what everybody does. Everybody does follow that practice. You only wait Ashigar B'Chaverov for the first haircut, and then later on, you don't wait Ashigar B'Chaverov. So that's what Rav Soloveitchik said over here by the spirit. You wait the first time for shaving Ashigar B'Chaverov, wait a couple of days, that's ready Yigar B'Chaverov, and then you don't have to wait any further. There is a problem over here. How can we make such a declaration? How can Rav Soloveitchik, how can the Panim Iris make such a statement that the Avelus, the minhag to observe Avelus during the Sfirah period is parallel to Yud Beis Chodesh? We know that if one lost a parent, they're not supposed to get married unless it's Ein Lo Ish Ubanim. Let's say it's a young person who just got engaged and a parent dies, so the din is if he has no children, he hasn't yet fulfilled the mitzvah of Pirei Veridya, so he is permitted to get married after the Shloshim is up. He's permitted to get married during the Avelus Yud Beis Chodesh. We have it all the time. People are getting married all the time after the Shloshim is up. So why don't we distinguish over here? Why should, if we say that the Avelus that we observe during the Sfirah period is only Mitzvah Avelus, means that it's only parallel to Yud Beis Chodesh, not Mochomer. It's not Mochomer. So we should say, you're not allowed to get married during Sfirah if you already have a house full of children, and he wants to marry a second wife. That's right, he wants to take a second wife. Or his wife died, and he wants to remarry, but he already has children and grandchildren. So by the way, till after Sfirah is up, not to get married during Sfirah. But if it's a situation of Ein Lo Ish Ubanim, he's allowed to get married during Yud Beis Chodesh. So if you say Avelus of Sfirah is parallel to Yud Beis Chodesh, and we should permit such a person to get married, the meaning is we don't allow Mishain Lo Ish Ubanim. We don't permit him to get married during Sfirah. So this kasha is posed by the Be'er Hetev on the bottom of the page in the Shulchan Aruch. And he quotes an answer from earlier Rabbanim, from earlier generations, that the two minhagim that are recorded during Seir that we don't permit Nisuin, we don't permit Tisporez, are not really the same. We don't permit Tisporez, that's because of Avelus. And we observe an Avelus parallel to Yibes Chodesh. But strictly speaking, Mishen Leisha Banim should be permitted to get married during Seir. So what's the minig there that we don't even permit such a marriage? He said that's a different minig. That's a minig loy misam lemilsa. This season of the year was always mucham leperonis. Terrible things always occurred to the Jewish people during this season of the year. The Crusades in the springtime. The Crusaders always started killing all the Jews during the springtime when they were able to travel. And other terrible tragedies always occurred during the students of Rabbi Akiva. The thousands and thousands of students of Rabbi Akiva died during this period of the year. So since this period of the year is a zman that's mukh on the paranas, so that's why the minhag developed that it's loy misam lemilsa, as if we treat it as if it were an unlucky season of the year. So we avoid getting married. It's similar to the practice that we have, which is also not a binding minhag, that when people are scheduling the date for their wedding, a couple gets engaged and they're trying to figure out when they're going to get married. So there was a practice in the days of the Rishonim that you try to get married the first half of the month as opposed to the second half of the month. First half of the month, the moon is growing bigger and bigger. So we want that to be a simi bracha, that the love for each other should grow bigger and bigger, as opposed to getting married during the later days in the month when the moon is shrinking. So that'll be, you'll be missing a simi bracha. So this was a dispute in the days of Rishonim. Is it permissible to try to be medaktik on this? Some Rishonim said it's prohibited. There's a din of lo sanachshu v'lo sa'oneinu. Lo sanachshu, not allowed to attribute any magical powers to anything. A person is traveling on a highway and a deer jumps in front of his car, so therefore he's going to go back home. It's a bad sin. So you're not allowed to say that. You're not allowed to do that. If you plan to go to that location and a black cat ran in front of you, or say, like a people are mocked, but not to walk under a ladder, and all kinds of mishuganish. So that's the din of lo sanachshi. You're not allowed to do nichush. And lo sanenu means ona, means man. You're not permitted to think that Friday the 13th is an unlucky day, this season is an unlucky season. You're not allowed to act like that. So there were Rishonim who said, you look in the Nemukhi Yosef on Sanhedrin, in Perak Avinisus, on the sugya of lo sanachshi and lo sanenu. So he quotes, there were Rishonim who said, it's prohibited to go out of your way to schedule your wedding dafke b'tchilas ha-chodesh as opposed to sof ha-chodesh. That's what do you mean? The beginning of the month is luckier than the end of the month? That's a violation of lo sa'aneinu. So in Shulchan Aruch, the accepted opinion is that it's permissible, not that you're obligated to. It says it's permissible to be medaktik, to get married in the beginning of the month. You want a simen bracha, like you want to have a white gown for the kala. You want to have a simen bracha, like you want to get married outside to invoke the blessing that was given to Avraham Avinu. A simen bracha. So you want to get married at the beginning of the month. Not that it means that the marriage is going to be luckier or whatever. Rabbi Soloveitchik's parents got married the latter half of the month. They printed a copy of the invitation in one of the books about the Gedolei HaTorah in Europe. So they wanted to show the way the invitation was very plain. That it doesn't say Rabbi Mrs. Chaim Soloveitchik and Rabbi Mrs. Elia Pruzhin Elio Feinstein invite you to come to the wedding of their children. It says, we invite you to come to the wedding. Then it says, Chaim and Lifshitz Soloveitchik. And then it says the name Eliyahu and whatever, I forgot about it, but his wife, Tova and Gittel and Eliyahu Feinstein. So they have their first names, they don't have Rabbi and Mrs. And it's interesting. And they got married the end of the month, second half of the month. I forgot already which month. But they have the facsimile of the invitation printed in Gedolei HaTorah BaHamusa, in the four volume set that they printed in Eretz Yisrael. So the Achrayim point out, the Hungarian Achrayim point is that there never was a minig bedavka to get married at the beginning of the month. The minig is that you're permitted. You're permitted to insist on scheduling to get married at the beginning of the month. You shouldn't say that it's a violation of Lo Sa'aneinu. So that's what the Be'er Hetev writes over here. If you look in the Tur, the Behetim says, you look in the Tur, he writes that these two minhagim were instituted at different times in history. Originally there was a minig not to take haircuts during Sfira. That's Miktas Avelos. And that would include also, like Avelos Yid Beis Chodesh, that you're not allowed to get married to a second wife in Sfira. Or if the person is getting married later in life, he already has a whole family, children and grandchildren. He's 75 years old and he wants to remarry, so he shouldn't remarry during the period of Sfira. But if it's a young person, Mishael or Isha Banim, he never got married before, he hasn't fulfilled the mitzvah of Birrur yet, so based on that minig, he would have been allowed to get married during Sfira. So a generation later, they introduce another minig that we discourage people from getting married during Sfira, even if Mishael or Isha Banim, for a different reason, not because of the mitzvah of Birrur, because Lai Mesamna Milsa, and the Behetah gives the mashal, it's like getting married at the end of the month. We want to have it should be a simen toiv. So just like getting married at the end of the month, we're lacking a simen toiv. It's not a simen rab, but you're lacking a simen toiv. So we choose to have a simen toiv, not to get married during this period of Sfira. But really the Paschim, in other words, what the Panamira said and what Rav Soloveitchik said, says in the Behetah already, that the Avelis of Sfira is parallel to Yud Beis Chodesh. And based on that, really, Misha Ein Lo Isha Banim should have been permitted to get married during Sfira. How come we don't allow it? The answer is a separate minhag that was introduced later. Two different generations, they introduced the two different minhagim for two different reasons. The Tisporis is because of Avelis, and the Nisun is because Lo Mesamna Milsa. You'll be lacking a Simen Toif. That's what Rav Soloveitchik used to add on to this, that he felt that the same is true regarding haircuts during the 3 weeks. That starting from Shivasa the Tammuz up until the 9 days, the minik has it by Ashkenazim. Sfaradim don't have this minik. Minik by Ashkenazim is that we treat it like Yud Beis Chodesh. But the 9 days, the minik has it by Ashkenazim that we treat it like Shloshim. And on Tisha B'Av itself, the din has it that you treat it like Shiva. Now, so Rashi used to say, what about shaving during the 3 weeks? So he said, shaving during the 3 weeks is like Yud Beis Chodesh. If it's Hashigar B'Chaver, then you're allowed to shave. So if you wait a couple of days, you really need a shave, then you're allowed to shave during the 3 weeks. But once it comes from Rosh Chodesh Av, that's the 9 days. So the 9 days, Alpi Minig, are treated according to the Minig of the Ashkenazim, is treated like Shloshim. So in Shloshim, there is no Hashigar B'Chaver. So then he said, you're not permitted to take a shave during the 9 days. Unless a person needs it for parnasa, if he's afraid he's going to lose his job, let's say, if a person is not going to shave during Sfira, he's afraid he's going to lose his job, or afraid he'll lose some customers, or it'll affect his parnasa, but then Rav Moshe Feinstein has the famous tshuva, and the beginning of his first volume on Aruch Chaim, is one obligated to wear a yarmulke in the office, even if he knows that it's going to affect his parnasa. People are going to see that he's a religious Jew, and he'll lose parnasa because of that. So Rav Moshe Feinstein says, There are dinim, how far you're obligated to fulfill a mitzvah in HaTorah, how far do you have to go? If you're afraid you're going to lose a little parnasa, you still have to shake the lulav, you still have to say kriyashma, you still have to keep all the mitzvahs HaTorah. But with respect to dinim derabanan, it's a little less obligatory. With respect to minhagim, it's even less. The Moshe Feinstein says, if it's going to cause the person a hefsid of parnasa, he's afraid he's going to lose some parnasa because of the fact that he's demonstrating that he's Jewish by wearing a yarmulke. So he says he's not mechuyev to wear the yarmulke if it's going to cause more loss of parnasa. So here we're talking about shaving in Sfira, taking a haircut in Sfira, shaving during the 3 weeks or the 9 days. All of this on minhagim. It's only minhagim, and one is afraid that he's going to lose parnasa, so then we would be mekel on that. The Mishnah Brura quotes a suffix from the Prima Gaon that's very fascinating. The Mishnah says in the third parak in Maseches Maikot is all about the laws of Chalamoy. Maseches Shabbos has all the laws of Shabbos, Maseches Beit has all the laws of Yom Tov, and Maseches Maikot has all of the dinim of Chalamoy. It's the Maikot, it's the miniature Moi, the little Yom Tov is Chalamoy. So the Mishnah says in Eilu Megalchon, one is not permitted to take a haircut during Chalamoy. The rabbis were afraid that everyone is busy in the office, everyone is busy in school, no one's going to take a haircut before Yom Tov. Chalamoid, everybody takes off, so they're going to take the haircut on Chalamoid. So in order to encourage everyone, in order to see to it that everybody will take the haircut before Yom Tov enters, so they said, you're not allowed to take a haircut on Chalamoid. Period. So the Mishnah says that there's an exception to the rule. What if the person was sick in the hospital? What if he was traveling on a boat and there is no barbershop? What if he was in jail, in prison, and they didn't let him take a haircut? But there's some kind of an onus that he was unable to take a haircut, and the einus is an einus demuchach that all the people in the neighborhood are aware of. It's not just a private, everybody knows what his story was. He just got out of the hospital, just got out of prison. So then the Mishnah says it's permissible to take a haircut. So the Prima God then raises the question, maybe that's only Chalamite Sukkis. What about Chalamite Pesach? What happened to Sirin? Is such a person who came out of the hospital in the middle of Chalamite Pesach, is he allowed to take a haircut? So first he says, well, there are different minhagim when one observes the Avelis during Sirin. So some begin the Avelis of Sirin after Rish Chodesh year. So then the Avelis didn't begin yet. So just like there's a head to the take a haircut of Chalamite Sukkis, there'll be a head to the take a haircut of Chalamite Pesach as well. What about those who have the minhag to start the first 33 or the first 34 days of the Sfira? So they shouldn't be permitted to take a haircut on Chalamite Pesach, even though they were Yotzei the Beis Asurim, even though they just got out of prison, or they just got out of the hospital, and so on. So the Prima Gadim raises a possibility, the Mishnah Berurah quotes this Kuma, Prima Gadim raises a possibility that no, since it's Mutam Itam Chalamite, so it's Mutam Itam Avelus also. How does that make any sense? Mutim itam chalamayid is because it's an einus demuchach. That's what the Mishnah says. Whenever the person was onus, he was unable to take a haircut in advance of Yontif, and it's in a situation that everyone in the neighborhood is aware of, so then the prohibition to take a haircut chalamayid doesn't apply. But if you have a minute to observe avelus, so what does it help that it's an einus demuchach? What happened to the avelus? So apparently the Prima Gadim is suggesting a new understanding as to the nature of the avelus. He's suggesting a whopper of an idea over here. It's not that the minig has it that we observe Avelis during 33 days of the Sefer Torah. You don't take a haircut every day. You don't get married every day. You get married once in a lifetime. Sometimes a person gets married more than once in a lifetime. Okay. So you have to pick a wedding date. You have to pick a date when you're going to take a haircut. So the minig has it. Don't. You have to sit and have a whole discussion. When is the wedding day? This one, this sister-in-law is pregnant and she has to come in for marriage. So the other sister-in-law lives in Argentina or in Australia. You have to, it's a whole negotiation. So one of the factors in the negotiation of determining when the wedding date is going to be is don't pick a date in the middle of the year, pick some other date. But it's not that we're really noyig avelus. You're not the noyig avelus. You don't get married every day, so when you're picking the wedding date, take this into consideration. Avoid picking a date in the middle of the year. You don't take a haircut every day. Once in a while, every couple of months. In the days of the Shulchan Aruch, they didn't take a haircut as often as we did. So when negotiating which day you're going to take your haircut, so avoid taking your haircut in the middle of the 33 days of this year. But what happens if the guy comes out of prison, he comes out of the hospital on Chalamite Pesach? So you can't tell them, avoid taking your haircut. Set the date for the haircut. What do you mean? He just got out of the hospital. Hatush Kambrera. So then the people about him suggest the possibility there never was a minig to observe Avelis during Sira to the extent that you're not allowed to take a haircut. No, the minig was that you set the date for your haircut in such a way that it shouldn't be during the 33 days of the Sira. But if it's not a question of setting the date, you weren't given an option. You got stuck. You were in the hospital. You were in prison. You just got out of Chalamai Pesach. So then he raises the possibility, and the Mishnah Berurah quotes that, that maybe it should be mutter. If you say like that, so for people to shave every day, so the time is nothing to discuss. You can't say, set the date for taking your shave some other time. What do you mean? It takes a shave every day. He shaves every day. So according to that, Prima Gadim should be mutter to shave during the Sfira period. That's usually not the accepted opinion. It's usually assumed that there is a Nihu Gavelis during Sfira. It's not just an issue of setting the date. And they have to shave. It's like Rav Soloveitchik said, Achi Garba Chaverov. This is a Shaila. Is it permissible to attend for those who have the minig of Avelis of Sfira the first 33 days and the first 34 days? Is it permissible to attend a concert on Chalamoid Pesach? Is there really a minig to be noig Avelis? Or is it no? You avoid taking a haircut this season of the year. But let's say they're making a concert over there. The people are making the concert, their minig avelus is, they start from Rosh Chodesh year. And my minig is I start right away the first 33 days. But is there really an Easter? They set the date for the concert. So is there really an Easter that you have to observe avelus? Maybe not. Maybe Bichlal does no Easter. That's the suggestion that the Prima Gadim had. Regarding the Chalamoid concert on Chalamoid Pesach, Rav Shlomo of Vilna was a dayan of Vilna in the late 1800s. He and his brother, Rav Tzal Vilna, were both dayanim. They were both big geniuses. So Rav Shlomo of Vilna has in his Sefer Binyan Shlomo a very original chiddush. My father, Zechan Racha, used to teach Hilchas Avelis in Yeshiva every couple of years. I once mentioned this to my father, said, I never heard of that, when this chiddush. He claims that on Yontav and Chalamoid, one doesn't observe Avelis of Yud Beis Chiddush. It's simply not observed. So he says that, let's say, you're going to discuss observing Avelis of Sphira on Chalamoid. So he says it doesn't exist. You don't observe any Avelis of Yud Beis Chiddush. Avelis of Shiva and Shloshim one does observe. But Avelis Yud Beis Chiddush is the lightest form of Avelis. He claims that that's not observed at all on Chalamoid. It's a very big chiddush. So this is why he's opposed to the two minhagim that are recorded in Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch is against Rav Shlomo of Vilna. So he's convinced that he's right. It says in Shulchan Aruch that the Ramah in Hilchas Nesias Kapayim, a Kohen is obligated to Duchen when they call upon to Duchen. So the minute by the Ashkenazim is that they only Duchen on Yom Tov only when they in the middle of Chazor Hashat of Musaf. So the Shaila is, the Ramah writes that one is in the state of Avelos, should not Duchen. So what do you mean one in the state of Avelos shouldn't Duchen? So if it's, let's say, an Oval Alolev Alimo is in the state of Avelos for the whole year. Or let's say a person is an Oval for another relative and Yom Tov cancels Shiva. So it's still in the middle of Shloshim. If he already finished Shiva before and Yom Tov comes, Yom Tov cancels Shloshim. So he's not in the state of Avelos. Unless it's Alolev Alimo, so it's Yud Beis Chodesh. So the Ramah writes in Shulchan Aruch that if the Kohen is in a state of Avelus on Yom Tov, either in Shloshim or in Yid Beis Chodesh, the proper practice is that he should not Duchen, because the Kohen should only Duchen when he's in a happy mood, and he's in Avelus and he's not in a happy mood. So if Shlomo Vilna has a taina, what do you mean? An Ovel is in Avelus Yid Beis Chodesh on Yom Tov? He says even a Chalamoid is not Avelus Yid Beis Chodesh. He says it doesn't exist. You don't know any Avelus Yid Beis Chodesh. Not on Yom Tov, not on Chalamoid. So that's, he's saying against the Ramah. Ramah says that one does observe Avelus Yud Beis Chodesh, even on Yom Tov. Then there's a Ramah in Hilchas Lulav also. We have a minig that every day of Sukkot we walk around with Hoshainus once, and on Hoshana Rabbah we walk around seven times. So the Ramah has a minig that since this practice is Zechel HaMikdash, and in the Beis HaMikdash, the walking around the Hakafas was a fulfillment of the smachtim of Nei Hashem Alkech Meshivas Yomim. It's a form of expressing Simchas Yom Tov. So one is the state of Avelus. We should not participate in the Hakafas. He shouldn't go around with Hashainas. He should give his lulav to someone else who doesn't have a lulav, and they should go around. So that's what they usually do. One is in Avelus, so the Gabbai tells him to hold the Sefer Torah in the middle, and if he has a lulav, he gives it to someone else to go around. So according to Rav Shlomo of Vilna, many Achrayim Taina, Rav Yankiv Emden and others are unhappy about that. What do you mean? He's in a state of Avelus on Yom Tov. We don't observe any Avelus on Yom Tov. So the answer is we do observe. So Rav Shlomo of Vilna says no. Yom Tov Chalamoy, there's no Avelus Yud Beis Chodesh at all. Shloshim there would be, but Yud Beis Chodesh not. So that's Rav Shlomo of Vilna's Chodesh. There is an issue regarding, let's say, those who don't shave during Sphira. Some have the practice not to shave during Sphira. So the question is, what about on Erev Shabbos? Does it make sense that they shouldn't shave on Erev Shabbos? Erev Shabbos the Chadin of Kibud V'Yonig. You have to take a shower, you have to wear big day Shabbos, you have to dress up nicely. All year long, if a person needs a shave, is not going to shave, he's in violation of the mitzvah of Kvod Shabbos. You have to make preparations in advance, look at the Shabbos, to clean yourself, clean up the house, and to cook the food and so on. So does it make sense to have a minig avelus? There's only a minig over here. Are you allowed to observe a minig which is in violation of the din? We have sometimes in the Gemara has in Yevamos, the Apsarik on the base, a list of situations where we say, Yeshkach v'yar chachamim lakadogim v'nator b'shev y'al tasin. Sometimes the chachamim prohibit something with the Rabbanon, and they insist you have to observe the din the Rabbanon, even if it means that you lose out fulfilling a mitzvah v'nator. Let's say the moel forgot to bring the knife to the baby's home on Erev Shabbos, and the bris is supposed to take place on Shabbos, and there is no Erev in the community, but the whole prohibition of carrying the knife is only the Rabbanon, it's only a Karmelist. It's not a Rishus the Rabbi Minatur. So the Gemara says, we would tell them to postpone the bris to Sunday. Aye, but you're in violation of the Mitzvah Minatur, Amilu Bizmanu, Zerech HaShabbos, supposed to do the bris on Shabbos. So because of the Yisad the Rabbanon to carry in the Carmelers, they say, Yesh Kach Diyar Chachamim Lakadar Ben Atera, the Shevi Al Tasa. They tell you, don't fulfill the mitzvah of Milah. The Chachamim tell us not to blow Shofar and Roshana tolls on Shabbos, not to shake a lulav on the first day of Sukkot, when Sukkot falls on Shabbos. I'll give you a whole list of cases. The Gershon is Gar and Erev Pesach is not allowed to bring a Korban Pesach. We prohibit, the Rabban, we prohibit people from fulfilling mitzvahs ben atar. Do you have such a concept regarding a minhag? Yesh kach the minig, lakadov ben atarah, v'shev al tasa. A minig also has the, minig is also so powerful. Because I'm interested in observing a minig, so I'm allowed to violate a mitzvah ben atarah. That's a problem. There's a famous dispute in the Rishonim regarding observance of the second day Yom Tov and Chutz Lord. Yom Tov Sheni Shel Golias. Is that it's not Min HaTorah, that's for sure. Is that Min HaRabbanon or is that a Minhag? So Tosfos writes in Sukkah and Daf and above that it's only a Minhag. So the question is, only a Minhag? And we don't put on Tefillin? How can it be? There's a Mitzvah Min HaTorah, we usually assume. There's a Mitzvah Min HaTorah to put on Tefillin once a day, every day. And on the second day Yom Tov Sheni Shel Golias, only a Minhag. So the Minhag comes and it's Oikar Mitzvah Min HaTorah. So you gotta say something over here. So maybe there is no such requirement to wear tefillin every day, once a day. Maybe there is no such din. Maybe the din just is you gotta wear tefillin whenever you're in the mood to wear tefillin. That's a question. Because it doesn't make sense to say that you have to observe a minhag even at the expense of violating a mitzvah and a tur. That's a famous Kesef Mishnah. Rav Gutzman Zochan Lebracha, who was known for his shiurim, has a psak halacha in the end of the Sefer on Kiddushin. He has a tshuva halacha lemaisa, where he quotes the following Kesef Mishnah and Hilchas Korban Pesach. The Rambam quotes the din from the Gemara based on the pasuk in Chumash. When you broil the Korban Pesach, you're not supposed to slice it into lamb chops and broil each lamb chop separately. After broil it all together, Roshu al Krov al Kirboi, and after you broil the whole Korban Pesach intact, then you slice it up afterwards. So the Rambam says, but before you broil the Korban Pesach, you have to rip out certain chutei chelev and certain chalavim you burn on the Mizbeach. So of course that you have to cut out and burn on the Mizbeach. You're not going to broil it with the Korban Pesach. But there are other chutei chelev that are not burnt on the Mizbeach, but they'll make the whole animal trace. So you have to cut out the chutei chelev, you have to cut out chutei dam. When you salt flesh, or when you broil meat, even if you don't salt it at all, so all the blood will go out. That's only the blood in the capillaries. But if you have blood in arteries, so the blood in the arteries is not going to go out by salting, so you have to yank out all the arteries. You have to cut out the chutei hadam. So the Rambam writes, you have to cut out the chutei chelev and the chutei dam before you broil the Korban Pesach. And after broiling the Korban Pesach, then you have to cut out the gidon osher, which you're not allowed to eat, and you throw it out, and you don't eat it. So the Ravid comments on the side of the Rambam, we spoke about it before Pesach, I think. So the Ravid comments on the side of the Rambam, if I would be there when this character, the Rambam, would bring his carbon to the Beis HaMikdash, I would take his carbon and throw it on the floor, and tell him you're not allowed to eat it. What do you mean? You broiled the Korban Pesach with the Gidon Asher? You're not allowed to eat the Gidon Asher. It makes the whole carbon trace. So you can't eat the whole Korban Pesach. So he says, if I would be there in the Beis HaMikdash, when this Rambam would bring his Korban Pesach, I would throw his carbon on the floor. It's a trace. You're not allowed to eat it. So what's Taka Pshat in the Rambam? So the Kesef Mishnah on the side, Rabbi Yosef Kar explains Pshat. He says, the Mishnah, there's a Machlekes HaTanayim in the Mishnah, Chul and Ter Gidon Asher. And we paskin, ain't the Gidon Ben Eishet Tam. The Gidon Asher doesn't Asher. If you leave chelev in, if you leave dam in, so the chutei dam will make everything trace. You'll say tam ki ikar. But if you left in the gidon asher is ain't a notion tam, so it doesn't asher. But why not cut it out in advance? You may forget. No, the din is you have to broil the whole Korban Pesach in one piece. Rosh al krov al kirboi. So the chutei chelev and the chutei dam, you have no brary. You have to take it out that it shouldn't make the whole Korban Pesach trace. But the gidon asher will not make anything trace. So the din requires you have to leave it in. And after broiling the Korban Pesach, it doesn't make anything trace. It has no nesinas tam, eitz b'yamahu, and then you cut it out afterwards. But then the Kesef Mishnah raises the question, what about the Shuman HaGid? The Gid on Asher is taka ein b'gid m'reishin tam, so it does nasha. But the fat on top of the Gid on Asher, that does have nesinas tam. And that's two opinions in Tosfos, and the accepted opinion is that the Chelev the Shulman Agid will Aser the Behemah if you broil it. So what's going to be with the Shulman Agid? So the Kesh Mishnah answers the following. He says, the Gemara says in Gidan Asher that min HaTorah only the Gidan Asher is Aser. The Shulman Agid is Muta min HaTorah. And the Gemara never said that it's Aser min the Rabbanan. The Gemara's expression is Muta min HaTorah v'Yisrael Kedoshim Nogabo Isa. So he says the Lashon HaGemara means that it's only a minig. The prohibition against eating Shulman Agid is only a minhag. And he says what you have over here is a minig in conflict with the real din. The minig says you're not allowed to eat the Shulman Agid, and if you leave it in, it'll make trace the whole Korban Pesach. But the din requires min HaTorah, the Shulman Agid is kosher. Only the Gid is also. Min HaTorah, the Shulman Agid is kosher. So the din requires you have to leave it in. Rosh Al Krov Al Kirba. You're not supposed to cut it up in pieces before you broil the Korban Pesach. So he says, all year long, Rabbi Yosef Kara writes in the Kesher Mishnah, all year long, we're not allowed to eat Shulman Agid mitam minig, and if you cook the carbon, if you cook the piece of flesh with the Shulman Agid will make it all trace. You won't be allowed to eat it. Once a year, all the Jews had to eat Shulman Agid. They had to violate the minig. When? On Leil Pesach. Why? Because the minig not to eat Shulman Agid would be in violation of the Din Min HaTorah that requires Rosh Al Krov Al Kirba. They have to grow the whole Korban Pesach intact as one unit. So he says, whenever the minig is in conflict with the real din, so the din takes precedence over the minig. And you have other poskim have like that also. The Netziv has a Gemara like that, and Brachas, other sources like that. So that's the pashtus over here. That's what many rabbanim say about shaving the Kavod Shabbos. What do you mean you're going to be machmer on the minig not to shave the Kavod Shabbos? Shaving for Shabbos, if a person shaves all the time. What are you going to have a minig? You're going to wear torn clothes for Shabbos. That's in violation of a din. You're not allowed to. So the shave for Shabbos is a real din of Kavod Shabbos. Not a din in Chumash, but it's a din in Yeshaya. It says, Kibbut V'yonig is a pasuk in Yeshaya. So how can you have a minig in violation of a real din? The pashtus is to shave for Shabbos. You certainly should have to. Every year the issue comes up, someone's getting married, someone is getting married during Sfira, and my minig is that that's when I observe Avelis, but his minig is that he doesn't observe Avelis that time, so he picked an acceptable date. Am I allowed to attend the wedding? So I remember Rabbi Brunspiegel got married before Rosh Chodesh here. So the students were asking Rav Soloveitchik, are we allowed to attend the wedding? So they're asking an abstract, that someone is getting married and your minig is, his minig is, and so I said, I don't understand. Whoa, who's getting married? What's happening? So they said, Rabbi Brunspiegel is getting married next week. So I said, no, it's a mitzvah to dance at the wedding. What's the shayla? Couldn't understand what the issue was. So Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva about this. Am I permitted to attend the wedding if it's my Zman of Avelis of Sirid, but the Chosn Kala picked the date for them, it's mutter. So Moshe says there's no prohibition to attend the wedding. He says, if someone's getting married, it's a Suras mitzvah. So you're allowed to go to a wedding in the middle of Sirah. The issue is, the Chosn Kala are not allowed to pick that date in the middle of Sirah. But if according to their minig, that's okay. So they pick the date that's acceptable, and once it's acceptable, so I'm permitted to attend. Then he goes further and he says, and even if they pick the date that L'chala day is Asa, let's say they get married in between Rosh Chodesh year and Lag BaOmer, that's L'chala day, that's part of the minig of Sfira. So Moshe Feinstein says that it says in Shulchan Aruch, the minig is not to get married during Sfira, but if one gets married, Ein Konsim also, we don't penalize him. So Rav Moshe says, if no one's going to attend the wedding, Ein Lo HaKnas Gadol Mizeh, what can be a bigger knas than that? So obviously, even if he picked the date the Yisr, between Rosh Chodesh year and Lag BaOmer, Yud Ches year, even if he picked the date the Yisr, but bottom line, once they're getting married, so that's a Suras Mitzvah, the Moshe says, even if they picked the Yisr, it's also Mutter to attend the wedding. But he says, this for sure is Mutter. If they picked the date the Heter, that for sure is okay. Most told like that. One of the Machmirim of our generation published around 5 years ago, published a volume on Shabbos and Shuvah, so he has a whole Shuvah about this, comes out with Chumrah. So he gave me a copy of his Shabbos and Shuvah, so I just read this Shuvah and I was turned off and I sent him a letter, I don't accept your Shuvah. He thought that you have to be machmir, you're not allowed to attend the wedding of someone else who's getting married during your Zman of Sfira. If it's for him it's okay, if for me it's not okay, you're not allowed to attend the wedding. Rav Moshe Feinstein has his famous Chiddush in his Shuvah, where he claims based on records from the students of the Chasam Sefer that there are different minhagim, which 33 days of the Sfira one observes the minig Avelis. So Moshe claims he can pick and choose every year a different 33 days. You don't have to be consistent. So even though for the last 66 years you've been observing Avelis, this part, these 33 days of the Sefirah, if this year you have some reason why, someone wants to get married then, or you want to attend someone's wedding, so you can always pick, you don't have to switch, he says, I'm allowed to attend the other fellow's wedding, even though it's the middle of my Sefirah. But if I want to, I can switch my minig this year. He says that all the three minhagim are valid minhagim, and you have to observe Avelis during one of the three periods of 33 days during the Sefirah. I don't know if that's so well accepted. That's a very big kiddush. But Moshe claims that this is what the students of the Chasam Sofer wrote. Yeah, that's even more difficult. Yeah. Then in Shulchan Aruch it says that on the night before Lag Bomer it's not proper to take a haircut. That's a question. Why is one permitted to take a haircut on Lag Bomer? So for those who begin the Avelis from the beginning of Sefirah, so Lag Bomer is the last day of the Avelis. So we apply the rule of Miktsas Hayam Kukuloi. So the Avelis is over in the morning. So we usually follow that position that we only apply Miktsas Hayam Kukulo in the morning, not the night before. So that's why it says that for the purpose of taking a haircut, you have to wait till the morning of Lag Bomer. Or the Sfardim wait till the morning of Lamed Dalet Bomer, instead of the morning of Lamed Gimel Bomer. Others, though, observe the Avelis starting from Rosh Chodesh Iyar for 33 days. So Lag Bomer is not the last day of the Sefirah. So why are they permitted to take care of Lag Bomer? So the answer is they treat Lag Bomer as a Yom Tov for some reason or another. The author of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, the author of the Zohar, so they treat that day as a Yom de Hilula. When the Tzaddik dies, it's considered like a wedding day, like when the Nefesh, when the soul of a Tzaddik goes back to heaven, so the Rebbeinu Shlom rejoices over the arrival of that soul, like a Chosn rejoices when he's united with his Kala. So that's why it's called a Yom HaDehilula. Yom HaDehilula means a day of a wedding day. A Yortzeit of a Tzaddik is referred to in the Gemara Loshen as a Yom HaDehilula. So if you treat Lag Bomer as a Yom Tov, so then it should be permissible to take care of it, even Leil Lag Bomer. But only the daytime of Lag Bomer is a Yom Tov. The night of Lag Bomer is also a Yom Tov. So the minig is that even those who observe Sefirah from Rosh Chodesh Iyar for 33 days also don't take a haircut Leil Lag Bomer. But Rav Moshe Feinstein writes, but with respect to getting married is a Hamitzvah, so he said you can be mekel to set the date for a wedding Leil Lag Bomer. You don't have to wait till Miktsas Hayom Kukuloi to get married in the daytime of Lag Bomer. You can set the date for the night of Lag Bomer as well. Look, it's a very old minig. Either according to the Gaonim's version, the minig is because of the death of all of the students of Rabbi Akiva. We're commemorating the fact that Hoy Hoylam Shalem Shomem the Churban HaTorah because of the death of all of the thousands of students of Rabbi Akiva. According to the Zohar, we're observing a minig of Avelis on the level of the Raisa, that during the Sefirah period, we're counting Shiva Nikim for the Klal Yisrael, and when one is in a state of Tumah, one is considered also, in a certain sense, in a state of Avelis. We should all be zeicha to get out of the Avelis, and we all need a big Yeshua. The Baruch Shalom should help us all. We should have Yeshua Senechem. Hagut Niyantas.
Doesn't make any difference. One's in the shirt for you.
Yeah.